You know it's a good show when we get to kick it off by talking about one of our all-time favorite sponsors. That's right, we're talking about the masters of microdosing, Lumi Labs, and they want me to explain to you good people the benefits of microdosing using their Delta 9 THC gummies. If you're stressed out or your mind likes to run a million miles a minute, then you might want to give Lumi gummies a try. They offer indica, sativa, and hybrid gummies that are designed to be taken in smaller doses to maintain a level of calm throughout the day, or if you just want the pleasant sensation of being a little bit stoned, you can take a couple more and you're good to go. We won't tell you how to consume your Lumi gummies. They're one of our longest sponsors, and Scott and I can vouch at their quality, and yes, you can get them straight to your door no matter where you live, no matter what the draconian marijuana laws are. They will deliver to you thanks to that Delta 9 strain. So check out microdose.com and see their wares. If you decide to pick something up, make sure to use the code KINGCAST at checkout and you'll get 30% off and get free shipping. That's microdose.com, code KINGCAST.
Fuck yeah, Lumi Labs. Very well done, Eric. I am here to tell you about our corporate overlords at Fangoria. In 1979, the first issue of Fangoria was released into the world. It's been over 40 years, and they are better than ever, with each issue bringing you 100 pages of exclusive, carefully curated content honoring horror's past, present, and future. These articles and interviews will never be published online, so the only way to read them is by getting your hands on a physical, collectible copy of your own. We can't give anything away because we want the experience to be a surprise, but we can safely say that you do not want to miss a single page. So head on over to Fangoria.com to learn more, to subscribe, and while you're there, make sure to enter the promo code KINGCAST. Save 25% off your annual subscription.
Now on with the show.
Yes.
My name is Stephen King.
The ice is gonna break!
Bedlam! Bedlam!
You guys wanna go see a dead body?
Well, sometimes that is better.
Hello and welcome back to the KINGCAST on the Fangoria Podcast Network. My name's Scott Wampler.
And I'm Eric Vespi.
And we are your hosts. Our guest today needs no introduction to longtime listeners of the show. Y'all know the drill by now. He's the creator of Fuckboy Island, F-Boy Island. He's a frequent collaborator of director Mike Flanagan and indeed a producer of Flanagan's forthcoming King adaptation, The Life of Chuck, the husband of former KINGCAST guest Molly Quinn, and the man with the most intimidating hair in show business. He's here today to talk to us about one of the stranger Stephen King adaptations, and one that I don't think Vespi will mind me saying we have grown to be somewhat fond of over the years, thanks to what can only be described as Stockholm Syndrome. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome gentle angel Alon Gale back to the KINGCAST stage. Alon, how are you doing today?
Better now that I'm here, better now that I hear your voices. I'm sure your listeners feel the same. There's a certain comfort in being on the KINGCAST.
I'm glad that you're here because you're the first person associated with Chuck, who I think has been on the show since we paid a little visit to that set. And no one has told us we couldn't say that we went to the set, but it's been sort of implied that anything beyond that we should not say. So my
what
first
if I question, now say you shouldn't have said that? Just out of curiosity, what would happen?
Well, there'd be not much to be done about that.
and what's in the past is in the past, Alon.
Yeah,
that's true.
There's no stopping it. You're going to have to cancel the entire thing now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but ring that bell.
Yeah, we you know, we were told don't post any videos or images or any of that kind of shit, and you know, not to discuss anything in detail. But that was. That was kind of where they left it with us. But I'm wondering if you have any guidelines for us about what we can say further than that. Am I correct? And that's about all we can say right now?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that you're, if anything, you are bumping up against the ceiling of reasonable discourse in relation to the top secret project. I mean, not over it, not your... You're straddling, you know that thing where the four corners, you're standing in several places at once. You're in good standing, and you are on the line of potentially violating international law.
I'm going to tell you something, Alon. This is not my first time being in that exact position.
Well, you're a world traveler.
And, yeah.
And the Dakotas are among your favorite, if I recall.
And frequently wanted by the authorities in certain areas.
You know that thing, that Transformers movie where Mark Wahlberg has the card that has the age of consent in every state?
I do not, but I'm curious.
Wampler has similar knowledge, but about like where the government can and cannot enforce the laws of the land. So
yes, that's so true.
You do not want to challenge him on this because he will find the one like corner of a little county zip code that's technically owned by four different people, so you can't be prosecuted for murder.
This is why I love international waters, guys.
Yes.
I've been saying this for years.
You have, I haven't known you that long, but you are constantly referencing international waters.
Right. We're going to set sail, and I say.
It all makes sense, you know what's going to happen
out there.
That's right.
Yeah, boat's going to come back a little lighter. You know what
I mean? But it was great to see or not have seen you.
Yes.
There or not there. It was a pleasure or it was not.
Let's try it from this angle.
Yeah.
What can you tell us in your role as a producer of this movie? What would you like people to know for the time being?
I mean, as one of the executive producers, I'm just very excited for people to see what Mike has done. That's kind of all there is to it. I don't want to ruin anything. It's a great story, and everyone that's read it knows that. And it's an incredible piece of work for someone like Mike to adapt. And, Mike and Trevor Intrepid had a plan, and I am incredibly grateful to have been able to come aboard and be a small part of it. But it's, Mike's a really, really, really incredible filmmaker, and I can't wait for everyone to see what he's come up with.
Had you read the novella before he rang you up and told you he was doing this or that he wanted to do it?
No, no. I read the novella right after he mentioned that he wanted to do it.
And what did you, what was your take?
I mean, I thought it was just an incredible story and kind of, heartbreaking and really wonderfully written and dense and really kind of filled out a world in a way that felt poetic. And I think I was really quickly drawn to the source material. The story is just so much fun and sad and meaningful. And that's always kind of when you get a moment and you get to, you know, I think genre and horror often have, you know, they have the ability to tell really interesting human stories. The mild differences between, like, quote, the real world and the world that great authors can create and great writers can create. There's an uncanniness there, but the uncanniness is often so slight that you can play along, I don't know, the perimeter of human experience and kind of out into the ether and out into the void. And, you know, that weird place, you know, the way that you stand between good taste and international waters is where some of the, you know, where some of this lives, which is like right between who we are and who we could be.
I had a really interesting response to it the first time I saw it that I read the novella, where I think I was so hung up on like the formatting of it and how it's told, you know, famously, this is a King story that he tells somewhat backwards, you know, and kind of twisted inside itself in a way. Go read the novella.
Well, I had not noticed that. Is it?
Really? You're like, holy shit, that makes so much more sense now.
Now it's all coming together for me.
But, well, you really are. Well, you'll be a true executive producer.
if you actually earnestly
thought that. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's the executive producer thing, right? You just kind of say a lot of words, but you don't have any really meaningful impact. I think that's my job.
Yeah.
Something I wanted to ask you about, and I hope you won't take offense to this, because I wouldn't. And if you do, we will cut this question immediately. But did you watch The Curse on Showtime? I believe it was.
I did watch The Curse. I did.
Somebody I know hit me up while that was on and was like, hey, you know Alon Gale, right? And I was like, yeah, kind of. You know, we've met and, you know, he's been on the show a few times. You know, good dude. And they were asking whether or not that character that one of the softies play, Safty? I always get it wrong.
Benny, I think it's Safty, but yeah. I'm a fan, yeah.
Was asking if I thought that was based on you. And I did not think that. But I'm curious if you watched it and thought, oh shit, is that what I'm like as a reality show producer?
It's a great question because, believe it or not, I've been asked this by a lot of people.
Really?
And the truth is that, first of all, I didn't think it right away. Other than the only, you know, obviously the guy's got long hair, which I do, and the guy's wearing a ton of jewelry, which I do, and so there's some like obvious visual, comparisons to be made. I would be honored. I mean, even though he's like a scumbag, like, you know, if that was the kind of thing where I was taken into consideration at all, I think that'd be cool as hell. But I can't imagine that, like, Benny Safty and Emma Stone sat around being like, hey, who's that dude who made F-Boy Island? Maybe we can base some shit on him. I feel like it's a coincidence. And I feel like there's also just like, I look a little bit like a dirt bag. You know, I have that look. And sure. I think that like there's almost like a larger commentary about, you know, producers of all sorts. Of like this kind of like next wave of scummy looking dudes.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know.
I saw it like, you know, a month or more after I had had that conversation with my friend. I saw Benny in an interview talking about like, you know, his, you know, how he like crafted the character and your name did not come up.
I wish, you know, it's one of those things like it would be really cool to have come into the conversation, but I don't think I'm that important.
Did you finish The Curse?
And that's the only part that makes me sad. I did finish The Curse. I really enjoyed it.
I had a hard time with that show. It was so skin-crawlingly unpleasant in a way that, like, I know all of Nathan Fielder's stuff is a little skin-crawling, and I'm a huge fan of his, you know. Mm-hmm. And I kind of figured, well, it'll be... Here's the problem. The Curse was not leavened with any of some of the gentleness that comes through in Fielder's other stuff. It was pitched at an 11 out of 10 the entire time. And I just had a hard time like getting excited about watching it each week when I knew I was signing up for like an hour's worth of feeling like absolute shit while I watched it. But I kept up with it here and there. And then I watched the ending, and that ending is one of the craziest things I've ever seen on.
I mean, on TV. I was religious about watching it because, you know, I have one of those, you know, I have a hard time focusing sometimes. I watch so much TV and I love it. And I watch so many movies and I just try to keep up, and it's so hard for me to stay focused, but the kind of unhinged nature and the unpredictability of The Curse really worked for me. Like that feeling that you're talking about of, you know, tightened chest and slightly elevated heart rate and truthfully just like really never knowing where things were going. I can understand how that could be a little jarring for people, but I found it kind of really exciting each week to have no idea what the fuck was going on.
Well, that's definitely true.
It felt like a puzzle box to me. And
yeah,
I'm not sure I figured it all out, but I really enjoyed the pro. I've also never finished a puzzle, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like I've gotten puzzles. People have given me puzzles and I work along the edges and then I get excited and then I see the inside and I go, well, what am I really doing here? It's at best, it's going to look like the outside of the box, but like with more lines in it.
Yeah.
And so bigger. I stop because I kind of, what am I looking to uncover? But with the curse, I didn't know where it was going. And so I was super in.
Yeah. You heard it here first, folks. Alon Gale loves edging puzzles.
I sure do.
You can put that on my tombstone. Edger.
well, your business card. We don't need to do your Stephen King origin story today. And since we are working on an limited time frame with you this afternoon,
I'm incredibly busy.
Going to go right into this thing. For anyone who is somehow listening to this that doesn't know what The Langoliers is about, can you give us a brief recap of what this story is about, what happens in it?
Yeah, I'll do my best. So a plane takes off and it's headed to Boston, and that seems fine. And then something happens and 10 of the passengers wake up on the plane, and it seems as if everyone else has been raptured, for lack of a better term. Their watches and wigs and jewelry are still there. Thankfully, one of the 10 is a pilot who's deadheading to Boston to deal with the loss of his ex-wife, which is a charming thing to do. Is it ex-wife? I think it's ex-wife.
Yep.
And then these 10 people basically try to figure out what happened. They make their way to an airstrip in Bangor, Maine. They get to know each other in various ways. And they discover that they may have fallen out of time. They quickly discover that there's a time rip, more or less, which I think is the term they use for, you know, the I don't know, what is it, a chasm? Is it a like a black hole? I don't know the exact term, but there's
a portal,
some kind of thing, a portal, thank you, a portal that I think took the form of the Aurora Borealis over the Mojave.
Yes.
And essentially they then, but one of them, one of the guys on this plane, Craig Toomey, who's beautifully portrayed by Bronson Pinchot, I think is how you pronounce
it. Yeah.
Cousin Balky.
Yes.
He has memories of these, of his father warning him of things called Langoliers that are made almost exclusively of hair and teeth, if I recall the description, and we're afraid of them for a really long time. But they're making noises, gnashing robotic noises out near the airport in Bangor, Maine, where everyone is chilling, waiting to find a way out of the hellish nightmare. And eventually the Langoliers, they come out and they look like, in this version, like kind of like angry robot walnuts. And
okay, yeah.
And they begin kind of chasing them, and they, you know, they kill Craig Toomey, but then our pilot managed to get the plane back into the air, which is cool, and fly back towards the time rip in an attempt to bring them back to the normal world, we think. And one of the, there's a guy who's very brave and potentially Australian. is he Australian? Is he British?
Yeah, Nick Hopewell.
It's been a minute.
I think the
actor is Australian trying to put on a British accent.
Yes, but I'm not sure.
He sounds Australian. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he's great. And long story short, they discover that they're going to need to all be asleep when they go through the time rip portal again. And so one of them must stay awake in order to wake them up so the plane doesn't crash, because if you're awake, you get raptured, obviously. Long story short, this Australian British fellow sacrifices himself for the greater good. though he has quickly fallen in love with Laurel, another plane passenger. Mm-hmm. And he sacrifices himself for the greater good. And it's really a very happy ending for almost everyone, including the walnuts, who ate to their heart's content, as far as mm-hmm, I could tell.
Yeah, presumably in that other parallel reality, they just eventually eat the whole world.
Is that the story of the Langoliers? My whole childhood, I wondered what they were, and now I know, and I got to tell you, I'm satisfied.
Well, as the weird remake that we've championed here, Timekeepers of Eternity, suggests, they are timekeepers of eternity. They are the things that eat up all the dead time that we leave behind us. And so it's not quite like an alternate reality. It's a time travel story. Yeah. So it's like they just happen to be unstuck in time. And there's like a period where everything's just empty and flat and, you know, left behind as everybody that's in time moves forward. And these things are these interdimensional beings whose job is to consume and nullify everything that's behind us. So
it's one of my favorite time travel kind of ideas, just to be totally honest, because the thing I always buck up against with time travel is the idea that everyone's doing everything forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that they're all happening concurrently, that all realities, it's like when you get into multiverse and interdimensional stuff, the enormity of possibilities is already too large for me to really feel like I can get my head around. And then adding in the concept that all times must begin at different times, but an infinite number of times and work in parallel, it gets to be too much. And so the idea that like time is a thing, that it's the one thing that could potentially be static and we're moving through it, is a limitation I really appreciate, actually.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think it stands out as, I mean, listen, it's kind of a Twilight Zone premise, right? There's this locked room mystery of where did everybody go, and everybody has to figure it out. But what I really love about the story is that it's, you get all the great Stephen King-isms, right? You have like a pulp novelist on board that's like throwing out all these different like pulpy ideas of what could possibly be going on. So you have the writer character, you have the kid with psychic powers, you know, you have the dude going crazy. It's like you have all these, it's like a microcosm of all these great King tropes, but set in a genuinely compelling mystery. Like, The whole concept of falling asleep on a flight, a full flight, and waking up and everybody's gone and just their pieces, you know, pieces of, you know, a denture or, you know, jewelry or, you know, pacemakers and stuff. They're just laying around. It's like, what the fuck happened here? You know, I remember when I first read this, like, this is one of the early King stories for me that like just totally grabbed my imagination. Cause I think I read it before the miniseries debuted in 95. Is that right?
1995. Yes, that's right.
So I read it
before. On IMDb.
Yeah. And I didn't have any frame of reference for it. And so this wasn't like me going in like, oh, I'm going to read, I watch the thing and then read the original source material, which is what a lot of King was for me, because I was a movie kid, so I saw all the movie and TV shows and whatnot first. And I remember this being like a very early page turner for me, and I just loved the characters. I loved the situations, and the reveals were so smart, and the fact that the plane itself is kind of out of time, so anything you bring on board the plane eventually will regain its power, whether it's a struck match or a fizzy soda or a beer or gasoline, you know, in order to refuel and get back in the air. Like, I don't know. It was one of those, it's this great, like pulpy King thing that I just wish to God the adaptation was a little bit better or came out a little bit earlier or a little bit later. It feels like it's in that wrong time where TV movies looked their worst. The digital effects they were using were like they were just a step above a CD-ROM screensaver program. Yeah. It feels like if this had come out just like 3 or 4 years earlier, you know, you'd be kind of in that It or The Stand zone, right? Where everything got to be a little bit more cinematic. But to that point, I still think that Langoliers is ripe for a remake, and like they could, you know, I don't think the original's like beloved, you know, the miniseries is beloved by any means.
No.
Or really remembered outside of like hardcore, you know, horror or Stephen King fans. So I think Langoliers could actually do it.
The fact that the miniseries is not beloved in any way is probably why someone hasn't come along to remake it again. It's like, oh, they did that once and everyone didn't like it. It's like, yeah, but you did this right, you know? And Tom Holland, who directed, he's no slouch, but I think he's hemmed in by his budget here. He's hemmed in by the standards and practices of
right.
broadcast network television. I would love to see a new version of this. Someone will remake All King eventually, but right. I'm looking forward to this one more so than a lot of others, only because a lot of my, I just don't think need to be remade, period. And this is one of the few where I'm like, yeah, someone should take another stab at this.
Yeah.
I'm going to be this guy for a second. Someone who watched this for the first, I remember the commercials for this growing up and at the time, I was very young and a little bit too scared to get into anything that had any genre. So I just didn't engage yet at that age with genre stuff because I'd already been scared of all of it. So I watched this for this weekend for the first time, and I love it. I enjoyed every minute of it. I watched it in three unbelievably fulfilling hours. I'm not kidding. I loved everything about it. I totally recognize
even the meatballs.
Even the meatballs. And that's the thing is that like I for whatever it's for whatever it the meatballs made sense in the world to me. Mm. I know that sounds crazy, but like I was playing Myst back then. And it looked like Myst. And I could get immersed in the world of Myst in the same way that for whatever reason, this was just, there was a campiness to it that was self-referential. There was a little wink and a nod. But for the most part, I was just in. I'm not even like being, this isn't like a hot take. I just enjoyed it. And I was unprepared for a lot of, you know, David Morse is a guy that for whatever reason, he's so fucking good.
Yeah.
In everything he does, and he's grounded in a way that like David Morse is as good as the meatballs are odd looking meatballs. And so it hits a stasis for me. It worked in the middle.
He's so good. It like balances the scale for you.
Yeah. Like that's the thing is at the end of the day, I'm not like maybe I've watched movies wrong or TV wrong, but there was no part of me that was concerned that the meatballs were going to eat the plane because the show was not close to over. And so I don't need the meatballs to look real in order to understand what the meatballs are interested in doing, which is eating the plane. It just didn't take me out of it. I understood what they were after. They wanted human flesh, and I mean, I guess they didn't want anything. They were just cleaning up time as they do. Although, right, they seemed more interested in some elements,
they do chase
especially
down.
Craig Toomey. They wanted to eat that guy. And I don't. I guess.
Well, who didn't by that?
Well,
point?
Yeah, that, he's like, also covered in blood, and that traditionally attracts carnivores. You know, and he was loud. He was loud.
Real loud.
Man, but also, am I crazy?
He's the,
he's the
Gollum of this movie, by the way.
That was such a fun, uninhibited performance.
Oh.
I think totally. You're I think around the same age as us. So I think that you'll probably know what I mean by this, but up until I saw this, I think I had probably seen Beverly Hills Cop at this point, which Bronson Pinchot was in, but mostly I knew him from growing up watching Perfect Strangers, you know, and, you know, Valkyrie.
Don't be ridiculous. You know,
the Dance of Joy. Come on. You know, that was like a cornerstone of weekly appointment viewing in my family when I was, you know, real young. And so it was like mind blowing to see him in this kind of role after all that. And I still kind of feel that way when I watch this, because it's like I still just think of him as Balky.
That's the thing, is that for the first scene or two, I definitely saw Balky.
Sure.
He took me to new places. He transported me to a world where I forgot about Balky. And motherfuckers act like they forgot about Balky on a relatively routine timeline. But no, truly, like, for whatever reason, I lost it, and that was brand new for me. It really was. I'm not kidding when I say there was something I gained a lot of respect for his performance, both in Beverly Hills Cop and in, you know, and in Perfect Strangers. But this was just like, there's something really fun about watching someone just go like, I don't give a fuck. I'm going bananas. And there Full was like, tilt. It was almost closer to like a Vampire's Kiss Nick Cage than it was to anything else. And I just appreciated it. Like, the dude was just off giant sitcoms and going. I feel like if that happened today, this would be like a revelation, you know?
Yeah. It's an incredible performance, and he's
the like most watching charming. The baby from Dinosaurs take on an incredibly dramatic role and just nail it. It's so out of context. You know, but something where he's not the mama. But he couldn't say that. He had to speak in different, you know, kind of full language.
Yeah.
You wouldn't full see profanity. It coming, but it would be, you know, Patrick Duffy taking on a different role instead of the dad on Step by Step. There's a lot of people from.
Sure.
You know, from those TGIF shows that I think could have used an opportunity like this.
If you ever get a chance to talk to that guy, absolutely take it. He is charming as fuck. He came on the show.
Bronson did?
Yeah. We actually, do you know what Timekeepers of Eternity is?
No. This is my first day.
So, listen to this. This will blow your mind. Like, the first year we were doing the show, we got contacted by Fantastic Fest in Austin, Texas, which, you know, is like our mutually favorite genre festival in the country. You know, we've both been going for fucking the past decade and whatever. They asked us if we'd like to come out there and do something at the, at that year's fest. And they were like, and we have a pitch we want to make to you. We've got our hands on this thing and we really don't know what to fucking do with it, but we feel like y'all will. And it's really strange and it's kind of hard to describe, but, first of all, are you interested? And second of all, do you want to see it? And it was like, yes and yes. And what it was is a 1 hour long movie in black and white called Timekeepers of Eternity that this guy over in Greece made. And what he did was he printed out on paper every single frame of the Langoliers miniseries in black and white, and then painstakingly animated them by hand. He made his own cuts to it. He like kind of changes the tone of the whole thing by doing this. He adds in these weird effects where you can see the paper tearing and like eyes coming through, and just, it's the craziest looking fucking thing. And you watch this and you're like, why on earth would you do this? Like, this is incredible. Just a fascinating thing to watch. So we were like, yeah, of course we're going to fucking, yeah, we want to show this to people. Like, when are we ever going to see this again? And so our guests for that live event were the director on a screen from Greece, you know, like on Zoom. And then about 5 minutes into our interview with him, a second screen popped up and there was Bronson Pinchot. And then he joined the conversation and he was just, man, a fucking delight. Had the crowd eating out of his hand.
It was so cool because we were talking to the director and then we'd hear like the sound of page ripping or something, paper ripping. Right. And, and then it would like rip. And then that's when the screen popped up and there's Bronson there tearing strips of paper off. And we're just like, it was so, so great. And we're like, hey, this is awesome. We'd love to have you on the show. You know, come on the KingCast. He's like, yeah, sure. And you know, when you get that, yeah, sure. 9 times out of 10, that's a polite blow off. And then but no, the dude followed through and he came on, told stories about filming this in Bangor and being embraced by the community who were giant Balki fans apparently, and
yeah,
would put up signs, you know, saying welcome Balki and shit, you know, to him that he'd see on his drive into set every day. It's even
better than that. What he said was like he was staying out in a cabin somewhere in outside of Bangor, right? And there was only like one other house in the area, but he would drive past it and back home again every single day. And then one day he drove back, he was coming back from set and there was a huge sign on the front yard that said, is that you, Balki? And he fucking pulled into their front yard and fucking went and knocked on the door. Like that's the kind of guy that dude is.
That's so fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Real nice guy.
And he also happens to be a hell of a audiobook narrator as well. So he read Eyes of the Dragon and does probably one of my favorite incarnations of Randall Flagg just in voice.
Yeah.
Makes it super fucking creepy. The energy that he brings to Craig Toomey, he brings to Randall Flagg in that story. And it is a skin crawling. I mean, the dude's talented. I'm happy. I hope he has a nice little resurgence with, you know, I don't anticipate Beverly Hills Cop, the new one. Is it 4 or 5? I don't know what they're up to
I
now.
Think it's 4.
I don't anticipate it being a good movie, but like the fact that he's back in it, like I hope that people go, oh yeah, that guy, you know, he deserves a big comeback, I think.
Yeah. He needs to get with Quentin on The Critic. He needs a role like that. Like something huge, which would be kind of interesting given that he was in True Romance
for sure. Yeah,
but like he is just a super nice guy, and if you go look at his filmography, it's insane how much stuff he's been in that you wouldn't necessarily like. Courage Under Fire, you know, would you have remembered he was in that off the top of your head? It's
I think
he got pigeonholed as a TV actor and then was just kind of went off and did his own thing. Like For years, I heard that was the thing, right?
That's it used to be that you could either do TV or movies.
Right.
And a lot of people didn't get the opportunity to kind of reinvent themselves when it became super cool to do TV again.
Yeah.
And I think that's certainly a big part of what happens to a lot of actors from this period.
David Morse
being one of the people that just miraculously always finds his way into everything good.
That's another guy that I feel like should be a bigger star. If I called up my dad right now, I'm like, you know who David Morse is? He'd have no idea. You know,
but if he saw David Morse, wouldn't he right away go like, oh yes, David Morse?
I don't think he would. And he doesn't watch Morse re-education. He's coming on that Hellraiser show I'm doing to watch Hellraiser. I don't know if this is a good idea. I pitched him on the idea and sold it to him aggressively. And then like 3 days went by and he texted me back. He was like, all right, Tiger, I'm in. Let's check this out. This man has seen like 2 horror movies ever and is like mortified by violence or anything. Like he's a church going man, you know?
He's seen The Green Mile.
Yeah, but he wouldn't remember that. I think the average person, I don't think, would know David Morse's name. I bet they could pick him out of a lineup, or like if he was in a lineup and you said, hey, who's the dad from Contact? People would maybe be able to do that. My ultimate point here is that he is a massively talented actor and I think he should be on that level where people just, you know, are constantly name checking their favorite David Morse performances and shit. He's never bad. I've never seen him in a, in something where I'm like, oh, he's fucking phoning it in again.
No, I mean, that's in a weird way. He, you know, sometimes you enter a new world in a film or a TV show. And the minute you see someone who you trust, you know that it's going to be all right. And that's how I felt walking into the Langoliers. Because all of a sudden I see David Morse and I go, okay, no matter what happens next, I got David Morse with me.
Something else I'd like to talk
David
about.
David Morse, I trust.
Sorry.
No, no. It's very important that I finish that.
Get that last line.
Yeah.
Something I like to talk about in relationship to this, and I feel like you might have an interesting response to it, is that one of my favorite things about, I'm more of a fan of the novella than the miniseries, although I'm finding more things to like in the miniseries as time goes on. Mm-hmm. Is the concept of you wake up in a world where everyone is gone. Mm. This is a frequent daydream / fantasy of mine to imagine just everyone's fucking gone. Raptured, disappeared, eaten by dinosaurs. I mean, as
like
long
in
as
a
there's...
fun way or in a... Like, are you excited for that prospect? Or
no, I'm not what I'm not like championing is the entire genocide of the planet.
Sure.
It's the idea that I have the fucking run of the place and I can do whatever I want now. And when I have this daydream, and I've told this story on the show before, but like I always think, all right, well, I'm allowed in this fantasy, I'm allowed to bring like 10 of my favorite people with me. And we just fucking do whatever the fuck. You know, and we have like ultimate freedom and don't have to worry about, you know, you would have to worry about, you know, getting food and, you know, maintaining a water supply and all that kind of stuff. But also, like, I don't got to fucking pay bills anymore. I don't got to worry about the IRS. I don't got to fucking like none of it all goes away. And that part really appeals to me. So any form of media, novels, short stories, movies, TV shows that involves like a world where everyone has disappeared always kind of appeals to me because it's hammering that note that I am, I don't know, particularly drawn to for some reason.
I think this is very, very, very much about things that you should work on. and I say that as a friend.
Yes.
Someone who thinks you're lovely. It's one of the worst things I can imagine.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, there is.
Well, I am a misanthrope.
Yeah. But also you're setting yourself up for like part of the communal experience of forming a small group is that you have to dislike a lot of the same things. Liking the same things isn't enough. You have to have things that you rage against. And in a situation where you and nine of your friends found yourselves
Wait,
as the
why
only
do I have to have fucking things that I'm raging against?
You'll That's fucking my see, objection. Man. You'll Hold see.
On. That's my objection about real life. I'm tired of being filled with anger and fucking fear and confusion. Like, it's been uninterrupted years of that kind of shit. So
and you think that waking up in a world where there's no one guarding the nuclear power plant is going to make you feel better about that?
I don't got to live near a nuclear power plant. I got the run of the place.
But what is the run of, like, at some point, aren't you going to run out of, like, what is the point of life if it's not a reaction to the world at large?
That's fair, but the stuff that... A lot of the stuff that I get out of life, I could still discover in a world like that. I can still, there's countless movies I haven't seen, countless books I haven't read, countless art galleries I can go to, you know? And if I'm there,
but you can see all the movies, but wait, you can see all the movies and you can read all the books and you can go to all the art galleries, right?
I know, but now. I just really cannot. I really cannot overstate how tired of people I am. Along, I just don't. You're like, that's really what we're getting down to.
But I want to get you excited about the fact that you're being tired of people. Is why you can fall in love with others, is that I think there's a certain requirement for misanthropy in order to actually find appreciation for those 9 other people. Sure. I think you kind of have to hate the world in order to want to create an insular environment where you truly love. I think the world is like designed in many ways to scare us and to make us unhappy so that we have to counteract it by surrounding ourselves with things that we care about.
I understand what you're saying.
That's why in the Langoliers, you know, you have these two characters, they develop these relationships with each other. They find new people to like and dislike, right? They're engaging. Normally, Toomey is a guy that's just walking by them in an airport making an annoying phone call. But now, through him, they're able to fall more in love with each other because he's humanity at large to many of them. He's the problem with people, which allows you to appreciate the others.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's kind of why the Stand version of the Apocalypse is like the one that I find myself daydreaming about, you know, the one where it's like, what happens if you're the only, you're one of the only ones and you have to, the idea of raising everything down and regrowing from scratch is really interesting to me. It's not something I think that I would necessarily prefer over current life. I'm too much of a creature of comfort for that. I lose my air conditioning. You're going to watch a man go insane. Right. So I don't think I'd be particularly cut out for that, but there is something very appealing about like, let's just fucking start from scratch and, you know, and you find your people. Maybe that's the reason why, like maybe Alon, that's, you know, what you're saying here is the reason why I find the Stand so appealing versus, I don't know, Alien Invasion, where, you know, the world's destroyed around me or nuclear fallout or whatever. But, you know, but the idea of like just, you know, gravitating towards, you know, I'm too much of a goody two shoes, so I'd be in the Mother Abigail group or whatever, but like you're finding your community there and, you know, the idea of regrowing a community, you know, from a good point, you know, a good perspective or whatever, and having all the ideals and the fresh wide-eyed optimism of like, maybe this time we'll get it right. You know, I don't know, something about that's very appealing to me. I would not like to be stuck in the Langoliers out of time where there's nobody around thing, but that's mostly because, you know, I don't know, I'm a guy who likes flavor. I like, you know, I like having a soda, you know, that's fizzy. I like, you know,
yeah,
again,
smelling a fresh breeze.
You
know,
this isn't about a desire to live in the Langoliers reality. Yes. It's that
that's what I'm taking away from it.
No.
I feel like you're doubling down. Go ahead.
What I said was that it's hammering that note of the idea of an empty world that really does appeal to me. And so any stories along those lines, I'm always attracted to them a little more than I might be otherwise.
Mm.
Also, y'all have both made very great points here. I do want to point out though, that bringing up logistical issues like, you know, the air conditioning going out or something along those lines, this is a fantasy that I'm talking about. This is a daydream. I'm not thinking I'm not thinking about this when I've got 5 minutes to kill because I want to think of what other new headaches I could have in another world. It's like, I'm thinking about fucking going on roller coasters and visiting Las Vegas with my friends and doing that kind of shit.
You know, don't allow myself to have dreams that aren't kind of peppered with logistical issues, because imagine how disappointing life would be if maybe I guess you don't have to, but for me, the idea of like things going smoothly, that's my biggest nightmare, because that would throw into chaos and tumult everything else that I know. And like
things going
just for context,
things going smoothly is my biggest nightmare. You are out of your fucking mind.
No, like, I don't, but you have to remember that, like, I'm thinking about a world and, like, this is, like, I don't know which side of a hammer to use for what. So the idea of, like, being, like, in charge of anything is terrifying. You know, that's, again, going back to the executive producer comment, like, the idea is to be adjacent to people who have an idea what's going on. That's like the entirety of my life, talent adjacency.
Yes.
And
the
so
man
like
the, behind the man.
The man next to the man behind the man is where I'm at. And that's my career. I'm just trying to get closer to the man next to the man behind the man. But
yes.
Again, like the more people you take out of the world, the more responsibility I have. And I want to stand behind a bunch of people when the walnut meatballs come for me. Another sentence that I am confident hasn't been uttered recently.
Well, I'm recently. Glad I brought this up because I think this is, I think I've mentioned this whole thing a couple of times over the years that we've been doing the show. And I don't think I've ever had any pushback on it before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to this degree, but you've given me a lot to think about. I'm going to continue doing it, but I want you to know that I do think you raised some very interesting points, but
I think it's important to recognize that we're right on this one. I think we can all agree on to that. I think we can all agree.
Although I will say we can all agree that we're going to really seriously consider this until the next
like,
time
I'm
sitting in traffic.
This is a thing we can do. Like,
yeah.
I'm not.
Like, yeah.
Guys, I have
But the
an
next
idea.
Time we're sitting in traffic, we're all going to have the exact same fucking thing going, man, maybe Thanos should snap his fingers. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, see what I'm saying?
But then what you got is such a good example, except now all the cars are still there with no one to fucking move them.
A temporary problem, I mean.
The fantasy temporary version, problem. The cars of all, everyone's, it happened overnight.
The
most
cars,
of the cars
have
are
raptured.
Off the road. Yeah. Well, there'd still be cars, but like, you know, in the ideal version of this, like something has cleared all the roads.
All the electric
and also,
cars yeah, it, well, have been raptured.
Also,
and all the diesel cars are still.
All the electric
yes.
shit is still on. All gas pumps still work. Water, not a problem.
Can I ask you a question?
It's not a very realistic.
Is it okay? I know it's backwards because it's a podcast, but if you could live in that fantasy world, all the things that you mentioned, right? So take away my logistical issues and you get to run around, like you said, with your friends, but there's a couple of Langoliers out there.
Mm.
Are you still
taking
that?
Okay, I hear you. Are they devouring the world as they go, or are they just on the hunt? And can they be evaded or killed?
Not killed. Evaded, yes. But
is there any way to know they're coming?
On your feet.
Just the
sound. There's the noises. It's the same as the in the miniseries. You can hear the chattering of little teeth.
Well, Scott, one of the 10 people has to be a pilot, so you can always be available to pick up and leave. It's like an It Follows situation, right? So you have these things that are always hunting you.
Yeah. Maybe
one
Langolier.
So you just need quick evac at all points, yeah.
Maybe just one Langolier. And then the odds of it finding me over the course of the whole planet, I don't know. Because I also wouldn't want to live in this reality forever. Like, this
so
is like...
You got one Langolier in each state. Well, 48
no,
contiguous.
No, absolutely
Wait,
not.
You know how big a state is? A state
it
is
depends.
So big.
Have you been to Rhode Island?
But you can pick which state you're in, can't you? You can go to Texas.
I don't
want to
limit
Langolier.
Myself to a state. The whole idea is that I could fucking go fucking hijack a motorhome if I wanted to and drive it across the country.
Right, so you could evade one Langolier on the four corners and then just be another Langolier and then at other parts of the... This works much better than you're imagining.
You're trying to put more rules on it. I don't want...
I'm putting fewer rules. I'm just saying that you get all the things you want, but there's a hair teeth monster that can come eat you, so you can't just relax fully.
I think that punctures the whole daydream part of this, right? Because that isn't that the appeal, like, Scott, is the fact that you can just let go of like all the I have to keep alive problems, you know, keep
if I want to lay in a hammock a roof over my day, head I can do that. You know,
yeah. Time for us to graduate to adult daydreams with predatory monsters.
It's time for me to have fucking health insurance and a salary, Elon. That's what it's time for.
Okay, like, that's super fair. But
yeah.
But there's very little chance of health insurance. There's only 9 people around. I'm just saying.
You can only get health insurance in one state. And it runs out.
And it's
out.
Run by a Langolier.
The Langoliers, and Langoliers are in charge of our current healthcare system, I think.
Yeah, it's fucking 4-scale disaster. Anyhow, what else do we want to talk about in relation to the Langoliers before time runs out?
Maybe Dean Stockwell. I feel like we kind of glance over Dean Stockwell in the previous times we've talked about this, and I can't tell you just I watched Perfect Strangers. I thought Perfect Strangers was fine. It wasn't part of my identity. Quantum Leap, on the other hand, was a show I was obsessed over. So when Dean Stockwell popped up in this, like I lost my mind. And I think he's actually really good. He's the guy that's the mystery writer, the one that's like puts forth like all the this is how I would write the explanation for this crazy mystery that's happening.
He's so good.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just I love that he gets a chance to be. He's not really the lead here. I guess David Morse and the Australian hitman dude are kind of the de facto leads. But he's a co-lead. Easy co-lead. And I don't know. I just liked seeing him. You know, he just has this laid back presence. I don't know what the question is here other than I loved him in this. And he's still like a bright spot for me is watching this and going, I get to spend a little time with Dean Stockwell.
He's one of the more kind of fun characters. And I was not super familiar with him prior to this. So for me, it was a little bit of discovery. And what I kept really getting into, what I kept really enjoying is his discovery felt really fun and genuine within the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which was like, he really was observing and he also felt as a character drawn realistically in that he kept feeling like he didn't quite have enough data to posit his next hypothesis. And that was like so frustrating for everyone around him. He wanted to get it right. He wanted to check, and he was willing to take a few risks, even with his and everyone else's lives, to make sure he didn't say anything too foolish. But it's also like there's that moment where they're flying towards the rift, and you see that he knows that he has made a tragic error. Mm-hmm. And he knows that he needs to find a way to right the ship. And in some ways, in many ways, he is kind of the protagonist. He is kind of, at least he's the audience proxy, right? He's the one who lets you know what's happening. Without him, you don't really have a sense of the world as much as you could with somebody else.
Every character in the Langoliers is real lucky they ended up with all the other characters.
You're right.
Up to and including Toomey, who serves as pretty great bait there at the end.
Yep.
He's delicious looking.
I kind of made the comparison earlier that I'm like, yeah, it kind of struck me. He's Gollum here, right? He's this guy, he's dangerous or whatever, but he has a purpose. And even the psychic little girl's like, he has a purpose. And that purpose is essentially to draw the Langoliers away from the plane and give them time to escape. So his purpose was to die in much the same way. Spoilers, if you are the one of the three people that don't know how Lord of the Rings ends, in much the same way Gollum has to impact that story. And now that I thought about that, like I rewatched Langoliers this morning, and it was he's so sweaty, and like the way his hair is like just combed back and everything, he does kind of have a Gollum sort of
a little bit
thing. And he has an obsession with tearing paper, just like Gollum has an obsession with rings. I think that he is the Stephen King's Gollum. I'm going to go ahead and say Craig Toomey, officially Stephen King's Gollum.
See, I would have said Trash Can Man, but you know, I can't dispute your description.
I'm trying to remember what happens to Gollum. It's been a minute. It goes badly, right?
Yes. Frodo is seduced by the ring at the very last minute, and Gollum jumps him and steals the ring and bites his finger off with the ring and ends up being the reason why the ring falls into Mount Doom, because otherwise Frodo would have taken it and turned evil.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Yeah. Yes.
Do people know about this?
No.
I at least one or two. Yeah.
I mean,
so, yeah.
I do think that's all, you know, in a weird way, one of my favorite movie I watch a ton, an adaptation I watch a ton, is The Mist. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a similar, it's felt like a similar world to me in a fun way.
Yeah. Of
watching a bunch of people who are all in the wrong place at the wrong time, which also happens to be the right place at the right time.
Right.
And it's just really interesting to watch. I'm obsessed with tiny communities forming and the way that people assert themselves in new social structures. Yeah. And I think that's so much of what I loved about this, is that everyone needed to find their place, right? Everyone had to shed their previous identity and create a new one. And Toomey couldn't. And in a weird way, that's part of what dooms him, that everyone else recognizes that they are now a small part of a new, larger beast. But Toomey is so obsessed with himself and so self-possessed that he can't adapt to the new world. And his inability to find a place that's meaningful within the structure, obviously there's all kinds of other things going on with him, but just on a human level, he can't get over the fact that what he wants is the most important thing. And he's a cautionary tale in that way, which may be like either mildly poignant as a thought or the most fucking obvious thing and so clear to everybody. But that's what I like about the character.
No, well said.
He's
well
punished said. For not recognizing that as the world changes, so must you. Is that smart or is that dumb? Is that like, did I say a smart or a dumb thing?
No, I think you're right. Smart. I think you're right. I hadn't thought about it from that angle, so I'm sort of absorbing it.
Fuck but, yeah. Fuck you know. Yes.
You've earned your place back on the show.
I did a sentence right. Good.
Yes.
That not that one though.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't all be home runs. But we are out of time with you. Do you want to tell people where they can find you online and maybe tease whatever you've got coming up next?
I mean, the internet is a hellscape. Does anyone really need more of me? I don't know. I think y'all have had enough. Lovers and Liars is every Thursday night at 9 on the CW. And nice. The Goat is a great reality show that I made with a lot of my friends that's coming out on May 9th on Amazon. And I was adjacent to The Life of Chuck, which is coming out soon, I hope, to everywhere, I hope.
Yes.
Great. But you don't need more of me. This is enough. Listen to more KingCast. They've got lots of great guests and whatever other podcasts they do. This is enough of me for everyone for now.
For now. But you will be back. Thank you so much. Yes. Thank you so much for joining us today. Always entertaining to sit down and talk with you. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Well, I love you very much.
Love you too, man.
Okay. Thank you. That meant a lot to me and felt genuine.
Many thanks to Alon Gale. Love that, Alon. And I love talking about the Langoliers. I just got to say that's one title that I feel like we could do a little bit more with. And that's a good thing I feel that way, because I think we're already talking to another pair of guests that wants that title. So we're going to have to talk about that. Hopefully we'll space it out for you guys so you don't have to hear Langoliers talk too close together.
But on this one, you're getting Alon on it.
Right. You know? And that dry humor, that challenge, he's going to challenge your stances no matter how humorously presented.
He's a weird cat, man. I like that guy, but he's a weird cat. As I've told him to his face, you've seen me do this. Like, just a weird cat.
I
love talking to him. I do love it.
When we ran into him on the set of Life of Chuck, we I forgot which one of it was it Yumi or Kells, one of us like mentioned like, oh, you have a nice jacket, and he was just like, thank you. And then he went on to tell.
No, you're telling the story wrong. Huh? Kells said, hey, I like your jacket.
Yes.
And then Alon turned in front of me in a chair, like, yes, I'm watching this happen. And he turned his head, mm-hmm, very slowly in her direction. It took about 2 hours, uh-huh, for his head to turn. And he goes, thank you. And I was like, you're a weird motherfucker. You know that? Like, and he explained that, you know, his thing was that he is trying to take compliments better. Like, usually when people give him a compliment, he's like, you know, says some sort of self-effacing remark. He doesn't take them well.
Right.
And so he's trying to get in the habit of like just being like, thank you.
Yeah, but, accepting the compliment. Yeah.
And he was like, so what you're seeing there is like the gears of my brain turning where I'm like trying to be appreciative and like not say what I would normally say, but it came out very strange. He's a strange cat.
He's great.
Again, just a real fucking, I love that guy, but real
and
weirdo.
And he and Molly are so great together, and they play off each other so well. And I love both of those cats to death, and you will for sure hear more from Alon, maybe on this show and maybe on other shows. You never know. So, so I'm psyched that he came on. I'm psyched that he talked about this, which is still, you know, to this day, you know, I have mixed and very complicated feelings about the miniseries, but I love the Langoliers story, and, yes, and it, I have since I was a kid, and it's one that's always stuck with me. So any chance that we get to talk about it, I'm psyched to do that. So next week we are talking about another really fascinating Stephen King story, and it's one that always comes with multiple facets because there's so many ways to approach this title.
Approach it.
I went very like I don't know, Richie Rich there.
Leave it in. Leave it in.
I'm leaving it in. So we're approaching the Running Man next week is the topic. And, you know, that's one where we can talk about the text. We can talk about the goofy ass Schwarzenegger movie and how it has almost nothing to do with the original text. We can talk about how that's a good thing and a bad thing. Not sure how this conversation is going to go. We haven't recorded it yet, but I can tell you that it is with an up and coming genre filmmaker who has a new movie out called New Life. His name is John Rossman. And this cat is excited to talk, man. Like, it's sometimes when we book a guest, it can be like pulling teeth getting a book title out of them or a movie title. With this guy, like, we sent, you know, we're doing this all through publicists and stuff and going that route. And sometimes that can be an added roadblock. But when we said, like, oh, just tell him to send, you know, a few options that are his favorite King books or movies, we got like a list with explanations of why he loves each one of these from this guy. So I'm really excited to talk to this guy. I think he knows his King shit.
Yeah.
And the topic is very, very fun. And
and with New Life is great. Like, it, well, I don't know about great. It's very good. It's a really solid, like, you've seen the things that it's doing before. You haven't watched it yet. I've seen
I will be loading up the screener.
I think you will agree with me that it is doing things that you have definitely seen before, but doing them in a very different way. And it's also incorporating some, like, how do I say this? Well, I'll say it all on the show next week when he's on. But the obvious touch point for this story would be another King novel, which he did pitch, but it felt a little too on the nose to me, and it had been so long since we talked about Running Man. Fuck it, let's do Running Man. And but definitely see New Life, definitely tune in next week, and good times. And I think you'll enjoy this movie.
Yeah, I
there's some really interesting, like, there's scenes in this movie where you're going to be like, what the fuck is happening right now? Like, it's
nice.
No. It all adds up to something. It's good.
That's good.
Real good.
No, I'm excited for it. I was going to say I can't wait, but obviously I can because I put off watching the screener so far, just purely for for life shit and hanging out with people and other things have gotten in the way, but I will make sure to get it watched before.
That's fine.
So yeah, we got that. And then this Friday on our Patreon, we have episode 10 of this season of Shelbyville. So Shelbyville has returned. It's been a few weeks, so it is time to continue the tumultuous and very dangerous and sometimes vulgar and often sweet story of Bug, Crystal, and Bruce as we continue along this Stephen King themed RPG, tabletop RPG that we do with Mallory O'Mara, me and Scott, and our game master, Jacob Hall. And the shit's getting real now. If you've been following along, it's we're in the end game, as they say. So we're things are reaching a boiling point with the kids, and let's say the noose is tightening a bit as they go on their adventure. I don't want to spoil too much, but
indeed.
I'm excited to get it out there. I've seen the Discord. The folks on Discord have been going like, okay, so enough with the teasing bullshit. Are we getting Shelbyville this week or not? So I think they're hungry for it. So so I'm excited to release that. And if you want to listen to it and all the other cool shit we have on our Patreon, make sure to head over to patreon.com/thekingcast and sign up. Throw us a few bucks and you'll get so many things: interviews, commentaries, Shelbyville access. You'll get access to our Discord. There's so much stuff over there. We definitely know that it's asking a lot to have people sign up for yet another monthly subscription, so we try to make it worth your while and give you a whole bunch of stuff. So
I'm gonna go one step further and say, if you do not sign up for the Kingcast Patreon, a large gentleman, the guy from, have you seen 8mm?
Oh, of course.
What's the guy's name? He wears a leather smock. The machine.
Yes.
Nice. If you do not subscribe to the Kingcast Patreon, the machine will enter our room with Vespi and I in it and kill both of us. So, please come sign up. We need it to live and keep doing the show.
Yes, we like to not face the machine, only you can save us. So please do, and we'll take your silence is deafening if this isn't responded to. So, we got a couple of good ones lined up for the foreseeable future. So we'll see y'all next week for some Running Man with Mr. John Rossman, and we will see our patrons this Friday for the next episode of Shelbyville.
Adios, folks.
Bye. The Kingcast is a Fangoria podcast production. The show is produced, hosted, and created by Eric Vespi, that's me, and Scott Wampler. Tira Ansley and Abby Goel are executive producers. Daniel Danger is our art director, and editing is done by yours truly.